You are listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, episode 29. We are continuing our summer series, talking Sharks, Oilers, Bruins, and Hurricanes. And we have a special guest joining us from the Vegas Strip, Daniel Negreanu, to talk Golden Knights. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwombeck here. Welcome to episode 29 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at dauberprospects.com. Come back often and feel free to subscribe to our show on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at @DPR_show. I am with my co-host Peter Harling, managing editor of dauberprospects.com. Peter, you are a pretty busy guy. You recorded a different podcast yesterday. How about you let the listeners know where they can find you?
Yeah, hey, how's it going, Paul? Yesterday I was invited to go on to our sister podcast, the other podcast hosted by Dauber Hockey, Keeping Carlson. They focus more on that. But co-host Brian Combe, the fantasy hockey robot, is still away on vacation, so Elon asked me to co-host with him, and we just talked all prospects. We covered pretty much every team. It was a pretty extensive interview. And it's all about players who are potentially going to break the roster and call their candidates. Great podcast. Good time of year for it. If you're looking for good late round values in your upcoming drafts.
Nice. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to plug?
Yeah. Our senior writer, Cam Robinson, just recently published a great post, his preliminary August 2018 NHL draft rankings with the Ivan Hlinka Memorial all wrapped up now over the last weekend. That's the initial scouting opportunity for each draft year. So that's your first chance to get a look at this year's top draft eligible prospects. He also included a little summary on it. I did a prospects ramblings pretty much all about it as well. So you can check that out. And if you wanted to watch any of the Hlinka games, they weren't really broadcast on TV, so you have to watch them online. I provided links to every game, so you can just click on each game and watch. If you do, I recommend having the rosters ready to go. You can get them off the Ivan Hlinka website, because the commentary is either non-existent or in Czech, so you need to reference who's who by looking at the numbers. But that's it, man. Let's talk some prospects.
Yeah, let's go right into the Western Conference. You want to start with Edmonton or San Jose?
Let's do the Oil.
All right, sounds good. Let's go with your first man on the list, Anton Slepyshev. Listeners got to know about this guy this year, right?
Yeah, I thought so. When I was looking at prospects and players who I think might break the Edmonton Oilers roster and have an impact and be great sleeper picks. That's why you're listening to our show. And while Slepyshev, I wouldn't really consider him to be a prospect so much anymore. I mean, he played 41 games in the NHL last year. He's had another couple of cup of coffees and looks at the pro level in North America and the NHL. And he's a well-known commodity, but he's only 43% owned on Fantrax. I guess that has to do with the fact that, as I mentioned, he played 41 games last year. He only scored 4 goals and had a total of 10 points. So, nothing to really blow your skirt up. But if you look at all the depth charts and the projections on where everyone thinks he's going to be playing this year, it's on the first line right wing alongside you-know-who. So we talk about that a little bit on the Keeping Carlson episode, too, that I'm getting kind of tired about all the Edmonton Oilers players you talk about and their projections. And, well, if he plays with McDavid, then he'll be great. He'll be amazing. So a lot of expectations for Edmonton Oilers players hinge on if they play with McDavid or not. But, if you look at the Oilers roster, it shouldn't really matter. I mean, of course, playing with McDavid would be a bonus. But they've got some pretty other talented forwards that they should be able to generate plenty of offense. I'm looking at Leon Draisaitl and McDavid as your 1-2 centers probably. And then I didn't even mention Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, the first overall pick. Lucic and Rune, well, not prolific puck distributors, but they certainly create space and provide a net puck presence. They acquired Ryan Strome. They got Jesse Puljujarvi, who's coming up. And they signed Drake Caggiula last summer. So there's a lot of offense in Edmonton, and all signs point to Slepyshev cracking that top 9, if not first line. And he's only 43% owned, so I think he'd be a really good sleepy value pick in your leagues.
Nice play on words. Sleepy, sleppy. Very well done. Yeah. It kind of feels like from 5 years ago when we were trying to pick Sidney Crosby's wingers. Now we're trying to pick McDavid's wingers. And there is a good consolation prize back 5 years ago when if you didn't play with Crosby, you played with Malkin. And they had Jordan Staal even further down. So they're kind of building the Pittsburgh Penguins from 5, 7 years ago. So it's looking really good in Edmonton, and everybody's got high hopes for Edmonton. So, yeah, if you can find the winger that's on McDavid's left or right side, then by all means, you're going to have a good one for the entire year.
Yeah, there's a fantasy hockey oil well pun in there that I can't think of right now. But anyways, yes, they're gushing in fantasy value. Load up on Edmonton Oilers.
All right, give us another forward then from the Oilers that you want to look at.
Okay, so Slepyshev is 43% owned. He's pretty well known. I thought I'd go in the exact opposite direction and pick a guy who's pretty unknown and only 9% owned on Fantrax, and that's little Joe Gambardella. So they signed him. I think we might have mentioned him a little bit on some previous episodes when we talked about college free agents. He was signed as an undrafted free agent. He played at UMass. He had a great last season. He's already 23 years old, so it's not like he's a 19-year-old trying to crack the roster. Doesn't have any pro experience, and he is only 5'10", but he's 201 pounds. He's an aggressive forechecking player. He projects as a third or fourth line guy, so don't expect him to light up the scoring lights. In fact, I would even say that he plays this coming season in the AHL almost entirely. If he gets a cup of coffee in the NHL, that would be, that would be a bonus. But this is a player who I think you'd be looking to pick for a really deep league, someone who you can sit on, but you don't have to hold on to him for 5 years because, as I mentioned, he's already 23. If you take a look at what he does in the AHL next season, if he's solid, if he's good, and it looks like he's going to press to make the roster, then you hold on to him. If he's a fourth liner in the AHL, then you cut bait and move on. And you didn't really lose a lot. Late round pick, prospect roster bench for a season. He's worth the gamble.
Yeah, and he's only 9% owned, like you said. So you're gonna have a good chance of getting him. It's not one of these guys that's like 70% owned that you go to look on the free agent or waiver wire and you're like, oh, he's already owned. So Gambardella is probably gonna be there for you in your league. So. Yeah, keep him on your watch list or just pick him up and put him in your prospect bench.
Yeah, he'd be a good bangers and mash kind of guy too. I think he's going to generate a lot of hits. He's a center, so he'll get you face-off wins as well.
Perfect.
Multi-cat leagues.
All right, let's move to the back end. Give us a couple defensemen to keep our eyes open for.
Okay, so I'll give you two. One I'm really sure about and one I'm not so confident with. So and they're both pretty low percent owned. So the first guy is, and I was thinking about doing Ethan Bear. But he's 53% owned already, and so I thought I'd do someone that has a little bit more value to the listeners, and that's Caleb Jones. So this is Seth Jones' little brother. He's been kind of playing in his brother's shadow for a long time, but he had his fourth year in the Western Hockey League playing with Portland. He's only 29% owned on Fantrax. He's American-born. He was a really key player for Team USA at the World Juniors. He really found his offensive game this year, posting 62 points in 63 games. So he's a point-per-game player as a defenseman. But, keep in mind it's his fourth year in junior, so he's an older player playing against younger players. He's got decent size. He's 6'1", 192. He's good in his own end. He skates well. He's turning pro this season because he's already played 4 years in junior, so he'll be playing with Bakersfield this coming season. He's not going to make the Edmonton Oilers roster unless things go horribly wrong with their NHL bench and he gets called up in injury relief. But I think he might be just maybe 1, maybe 2 years in the AHL and with some pro seasoning before he's ready to make the jump to the NHL. Now, he's got great upside, but it's not as high as his brother. Now, he's not going to be a number one defenseman, but he could definitely be, a 3-4 middle-pairing guy who gets you a lot of blocks and provides you with a decent amount of offensive production as well. He plays a great two-way game, so he'll play a lot of minutes, and I think coaches love this kid. So he's trending up hard in the right direction. The other guy is a big 6'6", 203-pound, not sure if I'm going to say his name right, but Zayat Pajin. He's only 20% owned on Fantrax. So he's a late round pick. He's been trending up a little bit for the Oilers as well. So last season he played in three different leagues. He started the year in Russia playing in the KHL, played in the minor league over there as well, the VHL. He played 17 games in both those leagues. Then he came over and he finished the season in the AHL on a ATO, played five games, didn't score any points. He's under contract. He signed his ELC, so he'll be playing in the AHL this season. Here's what I don't like about him. If you look at 6'6" defensemen who don't put up a lot of offense and you think, okay, hits, blocks, penalty minutes. And he's not an overly physical player. He doesn't really produce a lot of the greasy stats. He needs to improve his stride and his acceleration, but he's got a really good, hard, heavy shot. And he's really responsible defensively. So this is a player who is a project. He's a long-term. And if he develops some offensive and fantasy-relevant upside, then, you know, he could be good. Kind of like Stepan Falkovsky, who signed with Los Angeles, we talked about on a previous episode.
All right, perfect. And now you say you got goalie voodoo, and or you think goalies are voodoo, but you put a guy on your list that we should look out for. And I think we talked about this guy previous episodes when he had his infamous goal from his own end, Dylan Wells from the Peterborough Petes.
Yeah, so I went to a whole bunch of Pete's games last season, and for the last couple of years I've been going to Pete's games, and he definitely took over the reins as a starting goalie this year. They let their overage goalies go, and they handed the keys to the car to Wells, and he handled it really well. He was impressive all season long. He was outstanding in the playoffs for the Pete's, scored that goal against Kingston to throw a little salt in the wound in the elimination game. He also played for Canada at the World Juniors Summer Showcase Series, or whatever it was called, that just happened a couple weeks ago. So he split some games, but he looked really good. He's a candidate to play for Team Canada at the World Juniors coming up. And this is a prospect who is trending up hard as well. If you look at the Oilers' defensive prospects, I mean, Talbot is cemented as the starting goalie for now. You've got Laurent Rossat, who's a good prospect as well, but that's about it. They don't really have anything else that really impresses me. So there's opportunity for him. He's a long way away. He's got another year at least of junior, and then a couple of years in the AHL before he's ready to press for some NHL time. So if you're looking at Wells, who's only 16% owned, you could probably pick him up for free as a free agent. But you're going to have to slow cook this prospect.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I just looked him up as you were talking there, looking at my CHL Dynasty League, 24-team league, and 16% owned. He was still available. So I put in a waiver claim. We go through waivers every night, so you can't just jump on news or anything like that. So he's in my waiver claim, and hopefully I get him tomorrow morning.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, Larry, I'm helping someone. That's good.
That's right.
All right. So let's see if you can return the favor. Let's talk about some San Jose Shark prospects. You did some research. You got some guys. I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on some of these players. So the first player I want to hear about is it's Marcus Sorensen.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this kid. He's dual eligible. I'm a huge fan for dual eligible players. He's dual eligible left wing, right wing in Fantrax. Only 23% owned, and he's going to be a San Jose Shark this year. There's I very slim chance that I don't think he makes the lineup out of camp. That's basically all I gotta say. That 23% owned and making the San Jose Sharks, he should be a top 9 player.
All right, so they got a couple of other forwards that you're on your list, and I know a little bit about these guys. I think they're a little bit on the older side, a little bit aged. Danny O'Regan and Ryan Carpenter, a couple more forwards.
Yeah, and I put these guys on the list because they're both centermen, so if you're looking for faceoff wins, they're probably going to be third or fourth line centermen. They could get a few cups of coffee this year, but I think O'Regan's only going to play probably a quarter of a season. He's 53% owned in Fantrax, so I would rather look and pinpoint Ryan Carpenter if you're looking for more face-off wins in your league. I think these two are going to battle it out for that final 3-4 spot. I think Carpenter's going to win that battle, and he's only 14% owned, so you could definitely grab Carpenter from your free agency.
All right. And you got a couple defensemen as well. So our San Jose Sharks writer, Zach Devine, he's been really high on Tim Heed all season. What's the 4-1 on Tim Heed?
I'm jumping on that bandwagon. I'm a big fan of Tim Heed. 30% owned. He's going to battle Dylan DeMello or Brendan Dillon for the fifth or sixth spot. So there's three names, two spots. So I think Heed's going to come out on top of DeMello and Dillon just because he's a new fresh look for the San Jose Sharks. He's definitely going to be, if he doesn't make the roster, he's going to be the first call up no matter what injury happens in the top six. I don't think they'll keep him as a number seven, so if he doesn't make it and gets sent back to the AHL, I wouldn't be too concerned about that. He will get called up and fill in a roster spot, so Tim Heed should be on your watch list or pick him up. 30% owned.
Yeah, he's an undrafted player. He's a signed as a free agent in 2016. He had a humongous season in the AHL last year. He had 56 points in 55 games. That's crazy. Yeah, he's a little bit older, but he's only 26, so he's kind of in his prime. I think it's hard to, if you look at their depth chart, it'd be hard to keep him out of the roster. I think he definitely cracks the roster and probably, you know, he's an offensive defenseman, so he's got fantasy relevance for sure. I'd put him even on the second power play unit.
Yeah, and he's only 30% owned. So to get a guy that's going to get some power play minutes, he's likely not going to get the first unit because Burns is there and Vlasic or Paul Martin might steal some of that power play time. But he definitely will get power play 2 minutes.
All right, so there's a couple other guys who are going to challenge for either NHL time or the starting first defenseman in San Jose Barracuda, and that's Joakim Rönn and Julius Bergman. What's the story on these guys?
They're both long shots to make the lineup. I have a feeling they'll stay down in the AHL, and they might get a call up if there's more than one or two injuries. But I just wanted to mention these guys. They're 11% owned and 17%. Rönn is 11, and Bergman 17%. And they're very low value. And I think that needs to go up. That percentage really needs to go up. And even deep leagues, like these guys should be on benches, prospect farm teams, all that. So yeah, these guys are offensive minded guys and they should be on your watch list.
Yeah, they both had full seasons in the AHL last year. Joakim Rönn had 49 points in 65 games, and Bergman had 30 and 64. They're not kids either. Bergman is 21, and Joakim Rönn is 24. So these are guys that are they're NHL ready now.
31 and 31 depth chart and summer editions, Peter, on dauberprospects.com. We just talked about San Jose and Edmonton. San Jose will be posted August 24th, and Edmonton has already been put up. So go check those out there. We're doing a 31 and 31 for all of August, just like July, but now we're breaking into depth charts and summer editions and where some of these prospects land. So check that out on dauberprospects.com. When we come back, we're going to break down the Eastern Conference teams, Carolina and Boston Bruins. So stay with us. All right, we're moving to the Eastern Conference and we're going to be talking the Bruins and the Hurricanes. Peter, I'll let you choose again. Where do you want to start?
Let's start in Boston.
All right, perfect. Let's right off the bat, Jake DeBrusk, left winger, 71% owned. He's very highly owned. I left the two other big names that are highly owned in Fantrax, Vetrano and McAvoy, because they're kind of givens that they're make the team. But Jake DeBrusk is still a long shot to make the team out of camp. He'll likely play the full year in the AHL, but if he gets a chance at the NHL and gets top nine, top 6 minutes, Jake DeBrusk is a guy to look out for. He could catch the eyes of management and coaching staff. He'll probably battle Bjork for a fourth line, but I don't think the Bruins really want him to play on the fourth line. So if there's only a fourth line open, I think they'll send DeBrusk back to the AHL and let him continue dominating the AHL. And next year, maybe the year after, DeBrusk will be a Bruin. But I would watch this training camp battle and see if DeBrusk opens the eyes and maybe gets a longer viewing at the beginning of the year.
Okay, so you just mentioned Bjork, and on Keeping Carlson last night, I talked about him as well, and I said that I think he's going to be a top six winger. Where do you think you see Bjork playing?
I think he's still going to be a a third line guy. I have him on my list. He's 66% owned. I think once again you're going to have to keep close tabs on where he fits into the roster. I think he's going to be a third line guy. I think they have too many guys that are making a lot of money to not be getting the top minutes. So I think Bjork's going to be hamstringed there. I think that's all that's going to stop him is the money that some of these guys are making in the Bruins.
All right. So their top ranked forward is JFK, Jacob Forbaska Carlson. I'm a big fan of this kid. I really liked what I saw from him in at Boston U in the NCAA last season. And where do you think he's going to fit? Top six, third line, fourth line, AHL?
I think he's going to start in the AHL. They really like this guy's game. He's a two-way player. He's got a Patrice Bergeron-esque style to him. He can put up big numbers, but can also be depended on in his own end. He left Boston University after his sophomore year to turn pro this year. So 33 points in 39 games last year for Boston University. I think he's going to be... Yeah, I think he's going to start in the AHL, and then he'll end up... they don't want to give him fourth line minutes or 10 minutes a game, so I don't think they can afford any more minutes than that from their down their middle because of Krejci and Bergeron. But I think eventually he's going to be a top six guy, just not this coming year.
Okay. Another player we talked about on the previous episode, I'm pretty sure, was veteran AHL player Kenny Agostino. He had a cup of coffee in the NHL last year with St. Louis, and then he wasn't qualified and became a free agent. He's been signed by the Bruins. So this is a player who's not going to be waiver eligible. So do you think that that makes him a lock for the Bruins roster, or do you see him being a waiver candidate going to the AHL?
I think he's going to be not a lock, but I think he will start, but they won't be afraid to move him down. He's also left winger, 44% owned. He had 83 points in 65 games last year. He led the AHL in scoring. I think he's going to be starting with the Bruins, but they won't be afraid to drop him and release him because they didn't cost them anything to get. They got him through free agency, and he's kind of been a known AHLer, so I think they'll start him fourth line, Bjork maybe third line, Agostino fourth, and DeBrusk back in the AHL, and then if DeBrusk is lighting it up in the AHL, they won't be afraid to go DeBrusk, call him up, and Agostino be sent down and waivers, and if he gets claimed, then oh, too bad, they lost Ken Agostino. So I think if Agostino gets cold at the beginning of the season, then immediately drop him when they drop him, but maybe he's a guy to look out for if he stays hot with his 83 and 65 from last year.
Okay. Another player that's the same age as him that Boston signed as a free agent in 2015 is Austin Zarnik. He's played two-thirds of the season in the NHL last year and a third in the AHL. And in the 50 games he played in Boston last year, he had 13 points, which is not great, but not bad. He's a minus 10. Do you see him being a player that kind of bounces between both, or do you think he picks a league and sticks?
I think he'll bounce between both, and that's why I put him on this list. 40% owned. I think he'll bounce back and forth. He's a point-per-game guy in the AHL, 86 and 93 games, so just under a point per game, but he's not showing it in the NHL. So if he can show it in the NHL this coming year, then yeah, by all means, the Bruins need more scoring depth. They lacked that big time last year, and all these wingers basically need to show it, or they'll be sent back down to the Bruins and they'll find other guys to come up. There's enough of them that if you're not playing well to their standards and showing some offense, then they'll send you down and bring up one of the other kids. So most of these names are just names that I don't think they're going to play full seasons. Bjork's probably the most likely to play a full season with the Bruins, and the other guys are going to be fill-ins and pick them up if they get hot and drop them when they get sent back down. So, yeah, Zarnik's another guy that I think is going to be back and forth.
Same thing with Noel Akari. What's his Fantrax ownership?
He is 15% owned, and that's why I wanted to put him on the list, because he's more likely to be owned. He's a big hits guy. If your league counts hits, he's going to give you hits. The past 2 years he's been with the Bruins, 52 and 80 hits in 19 and 29 games. So he's getting 3, 4, 5 hits a game. So if you're,
oh my God.
Yeah, so if your league counts hits, then he's a guy that you want to pick up. His shots per game is only 1 per game, so he's not really going to show much more than that. But if you're a guy that needs hits and you're streaming hits for the year, I know a lot of fantasy people pick up guys at the end of Sundays, maybe not in keeper leagues and stuff, but they pick up guys for Sunday or Saturday night and who need hits or a specific category to win. So Noel Akiari is a guy that is going to benefit hits big time.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I'll keep that in mind. Cool. All right, let's shift gears. Let's go to Carolina. You know, I'm doing some prep for the Roto-World guide, and I'm looking at the Carolina prospects, and Ron Francis has done just an outstanding job of acquiring prospects. I think I said that before on another episode, but man, their prospect depth is getting embarrassingly wealthy.
In 3 years, they're going to be a really good team.
Yeah, it wasn't long ago that I was looking at their team, like just a couple of years ago, and I was like, man, this team sucks, and they got nothing coming. And what's really impressive is he hasn't just relied on the draft. He's drafted well, but he's also acquired draft picks, and he's traded for prospects. They've had some really good free agent signings. So anyways, let's get into it. Let's take a look at some of the players on the list I gave you. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with probably maybe the biggest name, Julian Gauthier. Let's fire off with the biggest name.
Yeah, all right. So the GOAT had a great season in the Q last year. The guy played 43 games. He had 51 points. And then he played in the playoffs. He had 16 games, was over a point a game again, scoring 17 points. He was dominant for Canada at the World Juniors. He scored 5 goals in 7 games, had 7 points. He was traded to St. John's Sea Dogs, and they went all the way to the Memorial Cup. He had a lot to do with that. In the Memorial Cup, he had 6 points in 4 games. He's humongous. He's 6'4", 225 pounds. He's a player that was drafted in the first round in the 2016 draft, so not the one just passed, but the year before that. And people were thinking, you know what, this is a kid that could play in the NHL. He's physically ready to play in the NHL and pro hockey, like, now. And he's a late birthday, so he's finished his junior career, so he's turning pro. He has a chance to make the Carolina Hurricanes roster this year, but he's a right winger, and they've got a pretty good team. They signed Justin Williams, so you know that he's going to play. Lindholm, Teuvo Teravainen, there's 3 right there, and they've got Stempniak. So unless there's an injury or something else happens, there isn't really a roster spot for him. He's a player that projects to play in the top 6. He's really good offensively, as I pointed out. But he's also good defensively. The kid's got good hockey smarts. He's got good hustle. He's got good size, too. So he can play an energy role in his rookie year in the NHL, if that's this year or next. You know, just kind of ease him into the NHL. You don't want to throw too much expectations and pressure on him right away. So there's a chance that he makes the NHL now. Probably going to be in a limited role. He's definitely going to be in the NHL, I think, by next season. And again, still could be in a limited role. So there's a potential for a little bit of wait time here, but he's a sure thing as you're going to get out of any of the prospects on Carolina. And his upside is prominent.
Yeah, I noticed in Dauber's prospect guide that he left Gauthier off. He normally has prospects that could play maybe 9 games or half a season or at least get in a couple games, but he wasn't even on the right wing depth chart. Is that telling that he doesn't think he's going to be making the roster?
The NHL roster this season?
Yeah.
I don't know. You'd have to ask Dauber.
All right. Well, maybe we'll have to have Dauber on when he gets a little healthier and gets some energy back. But yeah, I thought it was surprising that Gauthier was left off his depth chart, but yeah, I definitely am a big fan of Julian Gauthier, and he's NHL ready.
I think so too.
All right, let's move on to Valentin Zykov.
All right, so this guy's got left wing, right wing eligibility. He's a versatile forward. He is 54% owned, so a little bit high, less than Gauthier's 78%. He got his first glimpse in the NHL last year, played two games, scored his first goal. In the AHL last year, he played 66 games, and he had 34 points. He's 6'1", 224 pounds. So he's a player whose prospect value was maybe kind of waning. He came over from in a trade from Los Angeles in 2016, and he's been trending up for sure ever since he's come to Carolina. So if you're looking at him making the roster on the left wing, you've got Skinner and Aho who are locked in the top six. Jakob Norrström, Brock McGinn, Philip DiGiuseppe. Those are your next highest options on the left wing. So I'm saying there's a chance that he could play in the NHL this year on a regular basis.
Nice. So, yeah, he's 54% owned, so he's probably on half of people's rosters, and maybe you'll be able to pick him up. Another guy that is around the 50% mark, 58% owned, Nick Roy. What do you think of this guy's game? He's a shootout specialist, isn't he?
Yeah, every time I think of him now, I remember that unfortunate result in the World Junior where he had the shootout game on the line against the United States. He had to score to keep them alive, and he just tried to deke the goalie and just lost the handle on it. Didn't even get a shot off. It was a crushing way to lose for Canada. And I hope that for this poor kid that doesn't, you know, scar him mentally for the rest of his career. But it didn't really seem to have that bad of an impact overall in his season last year. 53 games, 80 points. He was a plus 30 in the queue. He's 6'4", 208, and he's another player that's turning pro this year. So I'm confident that Zykov and Gauthier have a chance to make the NHL roster. For Nick Roy, for some reason, I think he's a player that is just going to need to spend some time in the AHL adjusting to the pro-level game. If you look at the depth chart, Stahl and Rask, they're locked. Derek Ryan seems to have carved himself out a temporary role on the roster. They added Marcus Kruger. You know, you've got other guys who have center eligibility as well, like Lindholm and Paravainen. So I don't think that he's going to make the roster this year, but I think he's coming. And, you know, a lot of fantasy leagues don't count shootout points, so I wouldn't worry about Nick Roy. He'd be a great ad.
Yeah, perfect. I think the Charlotte Checkers are going to be a pretty decent AHL team with all these guys turning pro.
Yeah, for sure. Another one that's turning pro that is going to give them a real shot in the arm is Warren Fogle. He was the last player cut from Carolina's camp last year because his options were junior or the NHL, and he almost made the Canes. He was a late-season return to Kingston, and then Kingston's not quite ready to contend, so they traded him to Erie, where he ended up playing 61 games overall in the season, scored 63 points. He was named the OHL playoff MVP, won the Wayne Gretzky Award. In 22 games, he had 26 points, 13 goals. A lot of those goals were overtime game-winning varieties or game-tying goals, really key, clutch, important goals. And he had another 7 points in the Memorial Cup in Erie, was the champs. So he's got a Memorial Cup title under his belt now, too. He's only 17% owned. So this is a player who just, you know, he's the Rodney Dangerfield of hockey prospects. He just doesn't get the respect that he deserves. I would not be at all surprised if he made the roster this year. In fact, I'd probably be more surprised if he didn't play at least half the season in the NHL. I'm just a real big fan. He's versatile. He's great on draws. He's a left winger, center, eligible kind of guy. And he's tremendously responsible defensively. He skates well. He's got size. He's just really underrated. He's a dark horse player. I think you absolutely want to, at the very least, put on your watch list, depending on, you know, however deep your league is.
Yeah, only 16% owned. Let's get that ownership up. You've been riding this guy's tails all last season. You were a Warren Fogle tire pumper, pretty much. Anytime his name came up, you got just super excited about and wanted this guy on every one of your fantasy teams. So, Warren Fogle should not be 16% owned. He should be much higher than that.
Yeah.
All right, perfect. Peter. Yeah, that was great. If you want to catch the August 31 and 31 depth chart and summer editions that we talked about earlier in the episode, Carolina was posted on August 6th, and the Boston Bruins was posted on August 3rd. You can find them on DauberProspects.com. Click the Features button, and you'll see the full list of teams. We're going in alphabetical order. Peter, when we come back from the break, we're heading to Vegas. Get out the poker chips. Daniel Negreanu is going to chat with us about the Golden Knights coming to Vegas.
Vegas, baby. So get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there. They're all living the devil may care. And I am just a devil with no despair. So viva Las Vegas. All right, we're doing our interview segment now, and we're really pleased to be joined by our first guest that's not officially affiliated in any sort of hockey capacity, and it's a poker star, Daniel Negreanu. Daniel, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm a big fan. I listen to your podcast as part of my homework for my own draft.
Nice. Well, we appreciate that. So let's talk about, we're doing a summer series. We're talking about each team and their prospects, and we're really excited to get you on to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights and their prospects, and a little bit just about hockey in Vegas. So my first question for you is, were you involved at all in bringing the team to Vegas? Were you like an ambassador for the NHL in Vegas in any capacity?
Yeah, Bill Foley saw an interview I did on ESPN, and he reached out to me to help become one of what he called the Founding 50, which is a group of 50 of us who basically went into the community to try to sell season tickets to a team that didn't exist, where people would have to put 10% down to secure tickets. And of course, we got a lot of negative feedback from people in Winnipeg saying, we sold out in 7 minutes. I'm like, yeah, you sold out for a team that existed. We were selling 10% to a market that didn't know anything about hockey. And, you know, the goal was to really show Gary Bettman in the NHL that there's enough interest within the city of the 2.2 million residents to get a hockey team. Our goal was 10,000 tickets. And I think we hit 12,000 people put 10 to 10% deposits down for a team that wasn't even awarded yet, which was very important and instrumental in, you know, making it happen.
And are you involved with the team still?
I mean, not exactly. Like, obviously, I've talked to Murray Craven a little bit, you know, when I've had an opportunity to, and different things about sort of like, they actually have a lot of respect for my analytical mind, because as a poker player, you know, you crunch numbers and you think of strategy. And obviously, when you're starting with an expansion team, strategy plays a big role in terms of like, what is the best way to create a winner? And, you know, obviously, it seems like, I mean, I'm ecstatic with the job that Jordan Fee did in terms of building a winner through the draft. It's really like, if you look at the top teams in the league today and for the last 8 to 10 years, they're all built on a core of 4 to 5 guys who were cultivated through the draft, not through trades or free agency.
Yeah, you brought up George McPhee and his job with the expansion draft. Are you happy with his decisions with his expansion draft? Do you think he went off the board anywhere that you were like, whoa, what is he doing there? Is there any real shockers that you saw in the expansion draft?
Well, I mean, in terms of like the actual, you know, the drafts from the entry draft or the actual picks?
The actual expansion draft.
Oh, from the expansion draft. I mean, obviously, you know, you got a guy like Derek Englund. You've got, who doesn't necessarily add a lot of value in terms of the team winning, but, you know, he's a Vegas local and stuff like that. A few of the picks kind of had me puzzled a little bit. Like, obviously, you know, getting the Islanders goalie, who's obviously not going to play, but, you know, not on the surface, you look at those picks and you think, man, what the heck is that? But then you realize, wait a minute, there's more to this because there's deals associated with these picks where they left guys alone so they can get extra value. So I think in terms of like extra value for what he wanted, to get 3 first round picks for an expansion team in the top 15, I mean, wow, talk about, you know, like being able to build a team from square one. If you look at the farm system now or the future for the Golden Knights, we are not last. We're better than half the teams in the league. Would you rather be Vegas right now or Colorado, right?
Yeah, exactly. Do you think it's going to be hard to sell to the fans that they're going to have to wait for those 3 first rounders? Because I don't think Brännström or Suzuki or Glass are going to come in this year or next year. So it might be a 3 or 4 year wait. Are the fans going to be ready for that?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that Jordan McPhee had to do was sort of balance putting a relatively competitive team alongside building through the draft. I think that Vegas knows how to throw on a show and, you know, create a spectacle. So I hope that, you know, the community will understand that, you know, you're not going to be expected to make the playoffs in year one or year two or year three. And a lot of these young guys, like you said, will take 3 to 4 years, especially because, you know, you look at Suzuki and you look at Brännström, and they're both on the smaller side, but like high skilled players. So you'd expect them to maybe, you know, put some time in the AHL or something before they actually make the team. But I think that there's a lot of promise here. And if they do it right, they'll stick with this plan of cultivating the young guys and not like try to jump the gun early. Like, I hope they don't try to make the playoffs in year three, because if they do, they're really shooting themselves in the foot long term, I think.
Are there any players you think that are, we're looking at the depth chart, some players that jump out to me that are a little bit surprising when they're forecast to be off the roster is Alex Tuck and Thomas Nosek specifically. Do you see any players that are kind of projected off the roster that you think have are underrated and have a chance to make the team this season?
Oh, to make the team this season? Yeah, no, I'm not really too focused on that, because again, I look at the first season as sort of like, you know, I'm not really concerned with wins and stuff like that. So I look like I'm mostly focused on the draft and whether or not, like, deeper in the draft, they got some guys, obviously for me, for fantasy. And when I look at who they picked, obviously, you know, the top three guys are all, you know, fantasy draftable. But then in the fifth round at 127, they have an interesting pick, like, I don't know if you want to call him a boom or bust, but Lucas Elvenes seems like a guy who could put up points based on what I'm reading or, you know, seeing from scouts and things like that. And then, you know, your top three, of course, are all guys like Erik Brännström. I watched him in the summer series. I watched every game, and he was the most electrifying player in every single game. He played, I mean, I wouldn't say flawlessly, because it's not possible, but every decision he made was high end. He didn't look like, you know, when he was playing up against like a bunch of bigger guys on defense, he was able to, like, you know, clamp down on the stick, tie them up. Because obviously that's a big concern with a small defenseman like him, right? Whether he's going to be able to handle that. He didn't look out of place at all. He just looked like the best player on the ice. You know, obviously he's playing against people his own age on a larger ice surface. So you can make the argument, you don't know how that's going to translate to the NHL, but I love what I'm seeing with Brännström. When he made the pick originally at 15, I thought, wow, that seems kind of high. You know, he wasn't like most of the draft boards didn't have him that high, but now that I've seen him play, I think he might be like, he could end up being the guy that people think, well, wow, how did he not go higher? Like, I think he's comparable to Cale Makar.
Yeah. Brännström got a lot of strong reviews from when I was at the draft. I was speaking to some of the guys from Hockey Prospect Radio and HockeyProspect.com, and they all thought that Brännström was rated a little low, and that Vegas didn't reach for him when they drafted him where they did at 15, but that they got really great value in him. And you look down the road, the way the NHL is trending and the style of game he plays, he could be a steal, a great value pick.
I mean, I compare him to, say, you know, Timothy Liljegren, who was, you know, rated. He was, like, considered a top three pick for much of the year, and he dropped all the way down to 17. And if you watched the games, for example, during the summer, he was sort of an afterthought. Like, he played fine. He didn't do anything egregiously, you know, silly. But he just was lights, you know, Brännström was lights above all the other defensemen and pretty much everyone on the ice. I thought he was, like high level, amazing, awesome.
All right, so let's take a larger look at the team. They drafted a lot of D in the expansion draft, and they've made some trades. They still have a fair number of roster defensemen. Do you think that there still could be a trade for defensemen for another asset in the cards?
Yeah, if you listen to what George McPhee actually said at the draft, you know, initially you look at, you know, this draft strategy and you think, well, maybe we should draft like 6 to 8 or 9 goalies, right? Then he realized he would, you know, they would all go through waivers anyway, so he would basically lose them for nothing. So he stockpiled on defense, because that's an area where most teams can always add like a number 3, 4, or 5 guy, and they're going to need that. So there's a lot of value in a lot of the picks that he got, especially because teams were only able to, you know, protect 4. So you're going to get some really good shots at defense there. Like, obviously, he traded a guy like Mark Mathot, who was never going to be part of the team really. And I think it's a smart strategy to stockpile there with the intention of not keeping them, but, you know, looking to flip them. As of now, though, if you look at, you know, they do have a good core right now of young guys who have the potential to turn into something. You got Theodore, you got Schmidt, you got Colin Miller, and there's one other I'm forgetting. But the idea behind that being just like, I like the idea of these 22 to 25 year old defenseman, because you guys know it takes like a few years for defense to really shine, like not until they're 26, 27. So we have a core there already of D. So anything outside of that, in terms of some of the older guys, you're not planning on winning this year anyway. So if there's interest from other teams, I think there's still deals that could be made.
You mentioned the waiver wire, and that's interesting. That's something that I've been thinking about for Vegas, that they basically have three opportunities to acquire players: the expansion draft, the entry draft, and then the waiver wire. Once the season starts, teams are going to have to start making some roster decisions, and there's players every year that graduate to lose their waiver eligibility exemption. So there'll be some players coming through on waivers coming up once preseason rolls around and the season starts. Do you think Vegas will be active in acquiring players on the waiver wire? They should have a pretty high waiver priority. And if they do, and they might have to create roster space for the guys they claim, who could be cannon fodder for the waiver wire?
Well, I mean, I don't know specifically name-wise, but I can talk about a specific type of player that I think they should be looking for. You know, you often see, you know, a top 10 pick, you know, play for a couple years in a spot, not do so well, and sort of end up on the waiver wire somehow. I think players that are, you know, 23, 24 years old that just haven't panned out, possibly, you know, still have it in them, like they had it in them, obviously, when they were drafted. I think that's the way to go. I don't think there's a lot of value in Vegas picking up, you know, guys in like that are in their like 30s to make the team better this year. I think really what you want to do is like, they're like lottery tickets. You want to throw a lot of darts, essentially, and take some shots at some of these guys who maybe have had a rough start to the NHL, but had the talent and had the potential at some point that would be valuable. I think they should stay away from pretty much any players over 30.
All right. Paul, do you have a last question for Dan?
Let's go with one of your fantasy question for your teams. Who's a guy that you think is going to jump into the NHL that maybe you have rostered on your deep fantasy team this year?
So my team is, I mean, it's actually, I'm like, just like the Knights, I'm in a total rebuild right now. Our league, like I said, it's a keeper league, 20 years, we have 20 man farm. And I have a good, decent, I mean, I have a good group of guys here that not necessarily are going to jump in this year. I mean, Colin White is one player I have that is likely to jump in. Jace Howrylook is another. I also have Jeremy Bracco, who's probably 2 years away. One that really excites me, because I got him late, is Vitaly Abramov. Seems like, you know, he was a little small, but, you know, he's a very, very skilled player. One that I'm probably looking to trade, frankly, is Logan Brown. After watching him in the summer series, he's big, a little bit awkward skater. Like, so you can like almost see each step. It's like a slow process for him to get one end to the other. And I just don't think that he has that offensive, like he's looking, just there's a lot of spots where he's in traffic where he's just always like looking to pass and not really look to like create at a high level. So I'm probably going to move Logan Brown despite, you know, him probably being, I think he's going to be a good player overall, but I don't know about for fantasy perspective. So the one I'm most excited about right now would be definitely Vitaly Abramov in terms of his upside.
Yeah, I think those two names are real good, because Logan Brown, I think, yeah, I agree, he's going to be a really good NHL player, but fantasy player, he might not be an upper echelon player. He might fit in the mold, maybe like a, not as good as Jonathan Toews, but like a Jonathan Toews, who he's a better NHL player than a fantasy player, but he still will be fantasy relevant, just not nearly as good as he is on the ice.
I also think you're bang on with Abramov. I've seen him play live a bunch of times in Gatineau, and the kid's got skills. He's the best player on the ice on any given night, and he's gonna light it up when he makes it to the NHL. So he's certainly a player you want to hold on to, and I think selling high on Logan Brown is also a good strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I like to look for, especially when I'm like in the third or fourth round of the draft, I want those boom or bust guys. I don't want, like, one sort of buzzword that actually turns me away from a player typically is he's a two-way player, right? And that's great for the NHL. You want a guy who's responsible in his own end. I'd rather see, you know, sniper, offensive guru, clueless on defense, right? So, you know, if he does happen to make the NHL, he'll be a power play guy, top two line. The two-way guys too often end up on the third or fourth line, and, you know, your upside is maybe like 35 to 40 points at the NHL level. So, with those late picks, I really like to take shots on players with the profile that say he's just, you know, his high hockey IQ on defense is nil and void.
All right. We got to get going. Daniel, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you coming on the podcast, talking Vegas with us. For those of you who want to follow Daniel on poker, you can find him at Real Kid Poker. And thanks very much for coming on. We got to get you, you know, we're all about prospects. We got to get you writing for us in the future, bud.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'd love to. This is fun. I mean, this is literally my passion. I will be spending between, you know, from, I will be spending 200 to 300 hours, you know, scouting for this draft. So I get my information, a lot of it from the great stuff that you guys offer at Dauber and, you know, the Steve, I can't even say his last name, the draft analyst stuff. So I love this and I think it's great what you guys do. So appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Talk to you later, Daniel.
All right, guys. Take care.
A big thanks to Daniel Negreanu for joining our podcast today. Pretty neat to hear the perspective from somebody who has been pushing hard for several years for an NHL team in Vegas. Now he's counting down the days to October 10th, Vegas' home opener. I also want to give you a heads up that the Vegas Top 10 Prospects has been updated on DauberProspects.com. Go check it out. Let me know what you think. Give me your opinions on Twitter at Zwambag, Z-W-A-M-B-A-G. We also want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in throughout the summer. Hockey is pretty quiet this time of year, but we are trying to keep it going throughout the summer months. Please make sure to give us a follow on Twitter at DPR_show. You can also follow Peter at P Harling, P-H-A-R-L-I-N-G. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Cheers.